One, yeah, that was fine. It's fine. I think you're just slow.
Yeah, that's part of it.
Yeah.
Slow for a really fast guy.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
Like on the spectrum?
Do you mean like the world's tallest midget?
Exactly. Exactly like that.
Can we say that?
Sure. I don't see why not.
I think midget's a fully acceptable term.
I think we're okay.
Hello and welcome to episode 225 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tübingen, Germany, and with me as always is...
Adam, Vancouver, BC, primed and ready.
I'm also primed and ready.
Great.
For podcasting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, so we're on the same page. What is going on, Adam? First of all, is Amazon going on?
You took the words right out of my mouth.
What did you buy this week?
Nothing.
Oh.
I thought about buying stuff, though. Does that
count? Guess who tweeted me?
Who?
Gordon Corman.
That must have been a big day for you.
It was a very big day. Yeah. I think we might be pals now. I'm not sure how Twitter works.
Did he ask you to autograph copies of his book?
That would be weird, but okay. he did. He did. He did mention it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But
how did it all come about?
Well, I'd forgotten. Last week I misspoke and I couldn't think of the name. Though I meant to think of the name of one of his characters. It was Bugs Potter.
Okay.
The book is called Who is Bugs Potter? And then the follow up was Bugs Potter Live at Nickinany.
Great. Okay.
So, but I couldn't. But he also has characters named Bruno and Boots, and I mixed those together and I made him Boots, and then just added Randolph, who's actually a real person, I think.
Okay.
Musician. And so anyways, so I tweeted that out, and he actually, when I sent the tweet out, he responded. He wanted to know what I said. Yeah.
Power of the internet.
It is the power of the internet, yeah. Well, I mean, the cool thing, again, to hip you to who Gordon Corman is, I mean, he's written, I had to Google him, because I stopped following him when I was like 11. And we had no internet then, but since then, he's written like 85 books.
Wow.
He wrote his first novel. It was his grade 7 homework assignment, and he ended up writing a novel, and it got published when he was 13.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. So there you go. That's the skinny on that situation. But Amazon, if you do buy, go... For your kids, if you have kids who are, I'm going to say I probably started reading those when I was around 8 or 9. I'm guessing probably 9.
Okay.
Hard to say. Go pick up his books and buy them on Amazon. Why not?
Great. Yeah, why not?
What's preventing you?
Nothing.
Click through our site and everybody wins. How does that sound?
Sounds fantastic.
Okay, now what's going on in your life, though?
I'm not sure. Give me a moment to think about it. Are you asking because there's something going on in your life?
Well, no. I mean, okay. I suppose.
Yeah.
But that wasn't why. I was legitimately interested. I wasn't just waiting for you to stop talking so I could start talking.
Oh, okay.
I'm actually listening.
No, I don't really have anything interesting to report. It's just another week in the life.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. Good. Sorry, I wish there was something groundbreaking that I could announce, but I don't have anything.
Okay, then on to the baseball update.
Okay, great.
Yeah, we lost both games last week.
Okay.
But on a personal note, I had a pretty good day at the dish, so did all right. Got a few hits that day.
So what's your current batting average?
Well, it's early in the season. So
okay.
It's pretty high.
Okay. Oh, wow. So you just
it's going to come down.
You don't want to toot your own horn.
It's 500.
Well, you're on pace for the best season in German league history?
Not really. I think a guy might have hit close to 500 last year.
For the whole season?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, he walked away from his AAA contract to come and play in the German league. So,
okay.
Yes, he's pretty good. I don't know if he's playing this year, but no, I'm doing quite well. And then, but this is the kind of thing that you start out. Sometimes you start out really good, and then it just sort of tails off, and you get back into your normal. Hopefully, 300. Like 300 is kind of what you're ideally shooting for.
Okay.
And so it's better than starting slow and having to work your way up to it. That's all. So, but the other news is there was a bit of a shakeup in management on our team.
Okay. Now you're the player coach?
Correct.
Wow. I pulled that one right out.
You did.
Player coach Al Attridge.
Me and Frank Robinson. That's what everyone's saying.
I was going to say Reg Dunlop.
Reg Dunlop.
The all-time greatest player coach.
He absolutely is. I should have gone with Reg Dunlop. That's correct.
For those who don't know, that's Paul Newman from the infamous movie Slapshot.
Yes.
Yeah, go watch it if anyone hasn't seen it. Greatest hockey movie of all time.
I'd have to concur.
Yeah.
I'd have to concur. I really don't know. I mean, we're still early in the season, so I'm sure it'll be the rest of the season unless I horribly, you know, blow it terribly. But pretty much an interim job as far as I can tell.
Okay.
So I don't think they're engraving it in stone, but as of right now, I am the manager head coach. So.
Which means that you bat anywhere in the lineup you would like and play any position you would like.
Well, so far I've been batting ninth.
Really?
Which... At first, I was a little bit, you know, thinking, oh, I don't want to hit ninth. You know, sort of my macho ego was getting in the way, I thought. However, I'm seeing a ton of pitches in the nine spot.
Right. Because everyone thinks you're useless, right?
Well, pretty much. I mean, there's a nicer way to say it, but yeah. But generally, when you're playing a team that you don't know, and no one really knows me because I'm, you know, my first year in the league. So it's not like they have charts on me or something like that.
Right.
And so it's just, all right, well, here's a nine guy. Yeah, here's a nine hitter. He's going to see some fastballs. And guess what I like hitting?
Curveballs.
Well, I don't mind, but I like hitting fastballs better.
Oh, I was going to say sliders. My next guess was sliders.
I don't mind curveballs. This is the last of the baseball for now. I don't mind hitting curveballs or sliders at all.
Okay.
It's the changeup.
Oh.
For this is what Jack, does Jack pitch?
No.
He's going to their T-ball, right?
Yeah.
But he's going to play baseball, like regular pitching ball.
I'm going to assume so.
So when he gets a little bit older, like, I don't know, 12, I'll say.
Okay.
Changeup. If any of the coaches try to teach him to throw a curveball when he's 12, quit the team.
Yeah.
No curveballs for 12-year-olds. You know that. You're a physio guy.
Yeah. Wreck your elbow.
Yeah. No curveballs for the kids, but change-up. And the change-ups are those are the dark pitch right there. That'll get you out. So.
All right, two pitches. You got a fastball and a change-up.
Fastball change. That's all you need for until you get, you know, in your mid-30s. And then maybe curveball, but no. Fastball change. That's all you as long as and then learn where to throw it. That's all you got to do.
Okay.
No tricks. Speaking of photo stuff, because that's why we're here.
Oh, yeah, right.
Are you participating in the Lightroom update?
I haven't yet.
Do you have to update, or does it just automatically happen?
It asks you. You can either set it to automatic, or you can just do it whenever you feel like it. I've been just doing it whenever I feel like it.
I see.
I've only updated it once since I've been a subscriber.
Right, but there's a big one, though.
Okay. Does it do something I need?
I have no clue. I was going to ask you.
Oh.
Because I looked into it a little bit. It didn't look to me like there's anything that I was going to, you know, rush out and buy a new computer for.
Right.
Because I'm still on Lightroom 4, and that's where I'm going to stop for a while anyways. But you were on Lightroom 5 because you had the Creative Cloud version.
Yeah.
And they've gone to Lightroom 6.
Okay.
So that's one better.
Okay, that's, yeah, one better. But is anyone, you know, discussed whether or not there's any issues, you know, when they come up with a major update on almost any software, there's some kinks sometimes to work out.
Good question.
I'm going to wait for the listeners to let me know. It's doing everything I need and more right now, so I can't fathom that, oh my God, this is going to be the difference now that I changed to Lightroom 6. But again, because it's all included, if there aren't any real issues, then of course I'll update it.
I think one of the things that it handles is it'll do stitching panorama right in Lightroom.
Okay.
But
have to export it to Photoshop.
Right, but we'll save it as a raw file, which you can then edit. So,
that's kind of neat. Yeah.
Apparently, again, these are just the broad strokes that I happen to see. So,
okay.
Well, we'll find out.
This is another photography related item on the agenda. Have you seen this website? I came across it. I can't exactly remember how, but lightingdiagrams.com. Like it's an online, like it looks to me like a free service where you make your own lighting diagrams so that you can just essentially, it's got all the tools, all the different lighting icons, and you just basically, if you're trying to describe how you took a specific photo rather than drawing it like I've done in the past, it's just you can add whatever you like to it and then export it as a JPEG or a PNG file, and upload it to wherever, Facebook or wherever you want to post your lighting setup. So I haven't tinkered around with that. I just came across and I'm on the website right now just looking at it, and it looks pretty awesome.
I'll check it out. I have not seen that.
Yeah, it's literally, the website is lightingdiagrams.com. So
okay.
Yeah, just thought I'd mention it because it looks cool, and I was planning on, when we're describing lighting setups, because I know this week we did one light was a challenge, right? I thought, oh hey, maybe I'll make a little diagram just to test out this program and see how long it takes to do that, because I know sometimes listeners we may not do a good enough job explaining exactly what the lighting setup was.
We will try to paint a word picture this week.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think this week with one light, it's a little different. When you have multiple lights, maybe something like this is more useful because it's a little more complex.
Right.
But just a cool little tool for anyone out there who likes to tinker with these things, who's got some free time.
And it sounds like a good way to share. Like you could also, I guess, remember your like light. If you want to recreate a certain lighting setup for next time.
Sure, absolutely, yeah.
Does that, or if you want to share with other people.
Yeah, I was thinking more of the share part, but yeah, for sure, if there's a killer setup that you just don't want to forget.
Yeah, I'll check it out.
Okay.
Did you shoot anything interesting this week?
Just photo challenge stuff.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah, so sorry, I missed that.
I had one of those weeks where it was nice weather. We actually had nice weather, and but nothing interesting.
Okay.
So I'll describe the boring stuff.
Great.
Moving on then. Let's get into the photo challenge.
All right.
It was one. Was it one light? Was that your idea? Was your idea?
That was my idea because I haven't used I've been shooting a lot of natural ambient light photos for photo challenges. As far as I can remember, at least the last four or five, I don't think I've used any lights. So I thought, hey, I've got all this stuff, and somehow it has eluded me for a while. And nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's way easier to not get the lights out and just shoot with available light. But yeah, I thought, okay, now I really do enjoy doing lighting, so I just needed a reason to get the lights out.
Teaser, we actually talk in the today's interview, we talk about available light photographers versus flash photographers.
And why not be good at both?
That's what we're saying, actually. That's what we're getting at in the interview. That's all teasing you get.
Okay, wow.
So let's get into the photo challenge then. Which was your idea, so who goes first?
It doesn't matter to me. I'll let you decide.
Thanks for picking a horse.
Okay, me.
Okay, let's have a look at your photo here. All right. Here's Baseball Jack.
Yeah, it's been all about baseball lately around our house. So anyways, decided I was going to take one light photo. I did one of my daughter as well. I just decided to choose this one because I like the way it turned out. And this is just gray background paper, one mono light, or my Alien B strobe, with just a grid on it. So this is just bare flash, gridded bare flash, because I want to keep it off the background. So you can see by where the shadows are that the light is obviously camera left. And I'm basically just firing that bare flash in front of him so that it just more or less gets the front of him, the ball, his face. And I've got it down a little bit to make sure I get the catch lights, even though you get a bit of shadow off of his hat. I didn't want to shoot it from down to up. I wanted to shoot it sort of, again, on a just above cap level down and across the front of him. And he's only about, I don't know, two feet from the background. And the beauty of that that grid is that, yeah, you can keep it completely from hitting any of the background. So, I mean, it still is a relatively soft feel because I guess I've shot the light in front of him. It doesn't seem so harsh, the light.
Plus, I'm guessing you have the light pretty close to him.
Pretty close. Pretty close and pretty low power.
So that's the key, too, also, is the closer the light, the softer the light.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because relatively speaking, it is now larger, and that's what makes the soft light is a large source. And so if it's really far back relative to his face, it's going to be very small and be harsh. So,
right.
Yeah, getting close. Psh, not like it. I mean, is this going to be something you make a magazine cover out of? Or
probably not.
No, okay. I would say no just because it's pretty moody, unless you're doing a moody magazine cover.
Yes, it does. With the dark, absolutely. I just, it was sort of the idea of I did this in all of, well, to set up the background stand was the most hassle. So if I didn't set up the background stand, I'd say I did this in about a minute and a half. This was, I took two or three shots of him. He grabbed the ball. He's playing with the ball. I just went zing, zing, zing. As soon as I got his eye contact, that's it. Done. Like, this is so easy. I think that's the point. I think when people think lighting, they think time consuming and they think, oh, okay, I've got kids. There's no way I'm going to do this. Except for the most hassle is literally setting up the background stand. And the only reason I did that was because I wanted to make sure I completely blacked out the background. So I wanted the gray photo paper to make sure that I got a completely black background, killed all the ambient light, shot this at like an ISO 100. And like I say, at ISO 100 with the blinds drawn and everything, this is just in my living room, then I just need a very little bit of flash power at a close range in order to create the light on my subject. So I think for me, I, of course, getting cooperation from a six-year-old, I wanted him to be gripping the ball in a more appropriate manner. I really, and I could not, and there was just, that was not happening. So I kept, put your, because we've been practicing it at baseball, like how you grip the ball when you go to throw. And unfortunately, that did not happen. Yeah.
Does he four-seam it?
No, he just, well, is, do you call, do you, it's two seams, right? Where you get the two, we call it the cobra claws across the two seams, the cul-de-sac of the baseball, the horseshoe, whatever you want to call it.
Oh, okay, so he goes across the horseshoe.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a four-seamer.
That's called four seams?
Well, because when it spins, four seams, because the ones on the bottom, there's two seams on the bottom too.
Right.
So when it spins.
Right, but you're just gripping the two seams, yeah.
You're like, well, your thumb is touching on the bottom.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah, you're right, that would be four seams. But that was the objective. It did not happen, and then that's the only part that I really wish I could have had, because I do really like the photo outside of the weird claw thing he's doing with his hand.
That could be a very, very fancy pitch that no one's ever heard
That's
of.
True. Maybe he's setting up for a knuckleball or something. I don't know.
Could be.
Yeah.
Could be. So,
there you go.
I do. Obviously, I like it. I mean, it's baseball themed, of course. But and you get nice, because you're using the edge of the light, you get nice sort of fall off across the face, like a nice even lighting. Mm-hmm. Like from his right ear all the way across to like his left eye is very nice and even. You can see, however, in the front, because the ball is out front, more towards the center, closer to the center of your light source, probably, it gets a little bit hot. And it also, you're out of luck because that looks to me like it might be a training ball. Like, is it pretty soft or is it real?
No, it's soft.
It's soft.
It's like, ones, it's the kind of ball that he uses, for his baseball.
Yeah. Yeah, so those tend to have. I mean, when Uncle Alan comes over and hits him in the throat, you're going to want a softer ball.
Yes.
But no, those have a shinier, like a glossier finish, those training balls. So yes. You're already in tough. Like that's going to reflect a little bit more light. So that's very difficult to light no matter what. So it looks good. Nothing wrong with it. It's just like, you know, the only nitpick is it'd be a little bit hot. And it's so perfectly white too.
Yeah.
That a leather ball would be just a little hint of off.
I think you should check your monitor because in mine, like here's the thing. I looked at this photo on the iPad and on my computer. On my computer, it's not hot at all. On the iPad, it is hot. Are you looking this at on your monitor?
I'm not saying it's hot.
But his fingers too on the iPad show up quite hot. Like it's like it almost bordering on overexposure. But on my calibrated screen, it's fine. It's all the shadowing on the ball is fine too. But I got thrown off when I looked at this on the iPad. So I'm just wondering what source are you looking at right now?
I'm looking at it on two different monitors.
And it looks the same on both?
It pretty much. Now, I'm not talking about hot versus not.
I'm talking about overexposed.
I'm not talking about overexposed, but relative exposure. Compared to his fingers compared to his face are not an even exposure. Now, maybe, you know, on yours, that must mean that his face, on your calibrated monitor, his face must be slightly darker than on the iPad.
Yes, definitely. And his hand and the ball, all of it. And his face falls in what I would say is the correct exposure, a tiny bit on his fingers. The ball is fine too. The ball on my monitor is fine. The tiny bit on his fingers is the only spot where it's a little bit lighter, but again, not enough for me to ever notice. Whereas on the iPad, the only reason I even notice it is because I was comparing it to the iPad, which both the color balance on my iPad, like it shows up, his skin tones are a lot more blue on the iPad, and the fingers seem almost borderline overexposed on the iPad. So I'm just curious. This is just one of those things that I'm now seeing more and more, like such a variation. Whether I look at my photos at my work computer versus on my home desktop computer versus the iPad, I mean, it's just such a huge array, and I'm always going with the only monitor I have that's calibrated. That's my my desktop computer.
Yes. Yeah. No, it's probably a situation of like the contrast on the iPad is probably turned up higher than your calibrated monitor just so that you can, you know, see it outside for one. So that's probably why it shows up like that. Like I said, like it is a tiny bit, you know, brighter than his face. It's not washed out. It's not an even exposure. So it's just pointing out that because it is closer to the center of the light, it's just going to be hotter no matter what.
Yeah. No, I understand.
There you go. Okay, I shot one of my son for the one light. This is the shot I like to call the one where he's holding still.
Okay.
Because wow, does he not like daddy? I'll tell you what, he's not a fan.
Of daddy?
Of helping daddy, apparently. He's really not a fan of helping daddy. So, I remember I told you last week I had the light, you know, I leave my light set up, or at least one light with an umbrella set up downstairs in the kids' rec room or whatever it's called that we're not using.
Yeah.
And just whenever we want to run down and just go grab a photo. So I actually grabbed this today.
So okay. I have a first question. My first question is the crop. Okay, it's like an 8x10 crop, correct?
Ish.
To my eye. Freehand. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Why leave in the crop right at where you see the bottom of his fingers popping up? Like, if I had taken this photo, I would have thought, bring that up another inch. You don't lose anything from the photo itself, but you get rid of that hand fingers that's distracting from the point of this image. It doesn't add anything to it.
Well, if I cropped it there, I'd lose the two hosers watermark.
Okay. Yeah. And you couldn't have placed that elsewhere.
Interesting.
Yeah. No, did you not notice that? Or
I never thought of it. No, I noticed his hand there, but it never occurred to me that I was cutting off his thumb and one finger. I was looking at the rest of the balance of the image, and that's what I liked.
Oh, okay.
Never saw it. No, I think you're probably right.
Just if it came up even like just a tiny bit and got rid of the bottom of that hand, then again, it just seems like an unnecessary distraction. I actually saw this photo and I showed it to my kids and they like it because they like all things Sam. My only critique of this, forget the hand because that's easily fixed just to bring that up, but is the too dark on the near side of his face and the eye. Like it's almost scary.
He's a scary grizzly bear,
except
man.
For the rest of the photo, I really like. I like his expression. Uh-huh. I like the hat. I like the fall off in the background, and I like the far side of his face. I just wish that there was a little bit more light on his forehead and his eye. And like I say, this is probably one of those shots that if you had, you know, 38 more seconds with him cooperating, you just, you know, could have changed the angle like 2 degrees and had the exact shot that you wanted.
Am I
off base here?
No, you're absolutely right. Like, I thought the same thing. It's like the tone of this image doesn't really sort of betrays his smiley face. He's not really smiling in this one, but his eyes are smiling at you.
Yes.
See, this one, had I had A, a cooperating kid, and B, someone else at home, I would have actually used a little bounce to fill in his face.
But that kind of would have been against the rule, I thought, with one light. I mean, I thought about using...
Well, no, bounce isn't a light, though.
No, but I know. But in my mind, when we said one light, because I thought about using reflector 2, but I kind of felt like that was cheating to the idea behind this. Yeah, in my head, I was thinking just one light. Like, what would you do quickly with one light? Because that's more setup, more work, and... it'd be one thing if it was bouncing just off of like a ceiling or a nearby wall that you didn't have to do anything to create. But if you're setting up something else to create the bounce, like an adult or someone holding a reflector, then to me that wouldn't have been one light.
So I did not know that. And
I didn't make that clear, by the way.
No. In terms of after the fact, fail.
Yeah.
No, in terms of this photo, I really wanted to have the light where it was. Now, this is just one of my SB28s in a shoot-through umbrella that is really not too far out of frame, camera left, obviously, and pretty much at a 90 degrees from him. So like that's why you see his shadow right on the wall there, right behind him. And so I wanted to keep all, you know, a lot of the fall-off from hitting the background. I wanted that to go to darks in sort of a gradient pattern. Which allows his jacket to pop out, even though it's red and the walls are kind of like a wine color. And so otherwise, I mean, that's not a huge color separation. So I wanted to use tones for that. And I kind of wanted this sort of look. I mean, I didn't mind that his face was dark. It's a little dark. If I'd have known that we could have used a bounce and had someone to hold it, I probably would have used a bounce just to add a touch of light to his left ear on that side of his face. But other than that, the other pictures where I have all his, you know, his face lit up perfectly, I have about 1 million of those. So I wanted to go a little something different here. So there you go. Either way, I do like the kind of low key, the way the tones of his face kind of fall off, and
I feel like he's at the racetrack.
He did. He won the trifecta. Yeah, pretty big day for him.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going with the mutter.
Well, his mutter was a mutter, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there you go. Anyway, I enjoyed doing the one light. I mean, there's so much you can do with one light, and you can do very quickly and very easily, and the good news is you learn very quickly from your successes, but also your failures, and go, wow, I'm not doing that again.
Yeah.
So there you go. Great. I recommend shooting one light stuff.
I agree. One light is great. And for most people out there who haven't invested in, you know, all this kind of, you know, soft boxes and strobes and everything, most people have a flash, I'm hoping, that are listening to episode 225. If not, go get one. And there's a ton of stuff you can do with just, you know, one light and possibly an umbrella.
Okay, this week's topic. That sounded like it was edited, but that wasn't an edit. That was just a horrible segue.
A segue to this week's topic.
This week's topic is how to hire a wedding photographer.
Okay. Are you in the market?
I'm not in the market, but other people are. And so what I thought about is, I wanted to interview Amber Hughes again, friend of the show, excellent wedding photographer. And so I approached her about the idea about maybe she could tell us how someone could hire a wedding photographer. Not necessarily her, not here's why you should hire her, but here's what to look for.
Okay.
So now here's the thing is ideally, people listening are going to share this with anybody they know that might be interested in hiring a wedding photographer.
Okay.
So this show is geared towards people who aren't photographers and maybe don't want to be photographers. However, it's also a great opportunity to reverse engineer this and to look at the things that she says or listen to the things that she says and then reverse engineer it for you. If you want to be a wedding photographer or just a better photographer, you can learn a lot from this.
Great.
So there you go. So without further ado, here is Amber.
Hello, we're here. Well, we're here with Amber Hughes once again. Amber, you know from, well, hopefully our show and, you know, her website.
Is this where I'm supposed to say my website?
I think so. I don't know where else.
AmberHughes.ca.
Where else do people know you from?
They might know me from Facebook. It's, what is it? It's Facebook/AmberHughesPhoto, I believe. Hold on. You caught me off guard.
we can save it for the end, but what I'm saying is people, if they haven't checked out Amber's site, you're missing out. Check out Amber's site, and that's yes, where you know her from. So Amber is a wedding photographer, among other things. I think it's your main.
Mostly it's weddings, yeah.
Right. So we wanted to talk this week a little bit about from the other perspective.
Yeah, and find the right person for you.
So, I mean, I think that, you know, for in the past, I got married, I'm going to say between 5 and 8 years ago.
It's been 13 years for me, if you can believe it.
Wow. Did you have, a wedding photographer?
This is very embarrassing. I did not.
No, it's not embarrassing at all, though.
It was before I had started as a wedding photographer, mm-hmm. And it was way back. I mean, 13 years ago is almost ancient times in terms of how fast photography moves.
Right.
And so back then, it was really around the time that we were transitioning from film to digital. So there wasn't as many wedding photographers first off, which that digital, there's a million wedding photographers now. It's crazy. But back then, there wasn't as many. There wasn't really the same online presence. So it wasn't as easy to find, you know, look through people's portfolios, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And also, it was a lot cheesier. So I honestly didn't. Until I started shooting, I didn't really realize that wedding photography could be as artistic as it is. So I thought
you were the catalyst.
I wouldn't say that, but it was you know, it was back then when, like, really when I would think of wedding photography about the time that I got married, it was, you know, bride and groom peeking around a tree at each other, or all the bridesmaids' bouquets on the bride's train. You know, those sorts of really, really cliched, super cheesy wedding photos that you used to see all the time. So we ended up going with a family friend mm-hmm. who had shot weddings before, and it was very naive of us. I am that person who had a friend shoot it and had bad wedding photos. So take from me, you don't want to do that.
No, well, it's you'd like to know. We did the same thing, and I got married actually 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. But I was brand new to Germany, and the wedding photography industry isn't the same here as it is in North America. And so we kind of had like a friend of a friend who I went and, you know, met with her, and she seemed to know what she was doing with her 40D. And and we basically hired her for 4 hours. It cost us, I think, $100. And
oh my God,
that was fine. And she actually did a reasonable job.
Mm.
You know, like she exceeded the $100, put it that way. But it was the kind of same kind of thing where we got lucky. We didn't get, you know, Rembrandts across the board, but we got good enough photos for what we needed. You know, looking back, if I was getting married now, it would be different.
Yeah.
But.
Oh, if I was getting married now, it'd be completely different, obviously.
Sure. So nowadays, but you said like now there's such an online presence, but now isn't it kind of like finding a needle in a haystack?
It definitely is. There are so many photographers out there to wade through, and it can be really difficult as someone looking from the outside in to really see what what skills the different photographers possess. I mean, you might see a photo and be like, ooh, I really like that. The sky looks nice. But you might not understand how the rest of their talent set translates into how they'll capture your day. So that can be really difficult. It's hard to really be able to visually get an idea of people's actual talents.
I think once digital sort of entered the mainstream, like, say, I don't know what it was, probably 6-8 years ago,
yeah,
when it kind of reached everybody, I found that there was an awful lot of pretenders. Is that still the case, or did they get kind of weeded out?
No, there's definitely still pretenders. I see it constantly. I feel like every year there's more and more people out there calling themselves wedding photographers.
Okay.
And I find a lot of them, you know, they'll just be doing this as their hobby job for fun, and they don't necessarily know how to use, say, a flash or know really what to do in difficult situations, but they can take a really good photo in natural light, which, right, you know, that's great. But unfortunately, and I honestly, I tell people to really, really be cautious with anyone who calls themselves a natural light only photographer.
Right.
Usually that means that they don't actually possess the technical skills to be able to deal with difficult lighting situations.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that they're a specialty, it's that they don't have a full knowledge. And that can be really detrimental in certain situations. I love natural light. I use it as often as I can, but you can't always use natural light. Sometimes you're going to be somewhere that's super dark. There's, you know, the walls are painted black. You need to know how to pull out something and actually be able to capture those moments in those situations as well. People have paid you money for it. So that is the, you know, you see that a lot. A lot of people coming in and you know, oh, I've happened to take a few good photos at my friend's wedding. I'm going to be a wedding photographer.
Right.
And unfortunately, then you see people getting their wedding photos back and they're maybe not what they're expecting, what they were hoping they would be. So yeah, it is, it's scary because, you know, you can see a portfolio that looks really, really good. But then the actual wedding photos aren't going to be the same.
I think you can trust someone who says they are a natural light photographer if they charge north of $25,000 for your wedding.
Yeah. It's really, I don't think $25,000 necessarily, but, there are people out there who are fantastic natural light photographers, and I'm not kicking that. I mean, you know, I love natural light. It's my favorite thing to shoot,
mm-hmm.
but, and then, you know, I do have colleagues who that's all they shoot. They don't ever use flash and they do a fantastic job, but
if someone's charging $800 and says they're natural light, run away.
Yeah. If someone's doing, you know, less than $2,000 and calling themselves a natural light photographer, they probably don't have a lot of experience.
That's and that is definitely, yeah.
And it seems like, wow, you know, $2,000 is a lot of money, but in terms of wedding photography, it's actually quite low. Especially if they're doing a full day coverage. So it's just something to be really cautious about. They might be fantastic. They might be someone who's really got the skills and is just learning and building their portfolio. But, you know, you really have to be cautious with that sort of thing.
Right. So today, let's say you were getting married today or renewing your vows or whatever you want to call it. And you're going to hire someone. What are the first steps you're going to go through?
Well, it's a little different for me than sure. everyone. I'd just go to my friends because I know so many wonderful, amazing photographers. The first steps that I would do, though, if I wasn't in the industry, I would probably start Googling. That's the first step. You'll find a lot of people that way. There's a lot of really good associations online that actually list their members, like the Professional Wedding Photographers of Canada. That's one that's a really good one to look at. If you want a certain style of wedding, say you're more of a vintage bride or you want sort of more epic portraits, there's different blogs, different associations out there that specialize in those types of photographers. So you might look at those blogs and then see who they list or who they feature and use that as a way to start looking up different photographers. It's really one of those things that you have to sort of immerse yourself in online.
Okay. So it's important to know what it is that you want out of a wedding photographer first. I always tell people that, you know, you kind of want to manage your expectations. Like if you want, for example, if you want, you know, 300 or 500 Rembrandts a day from the whole day,
mm-hmm.
you're going to have to pay for that. But also, you know, does that happen? Is that a reasonable expectation to get 500, you know, perfect images?
Well, it depends on the photographer, right? Some photographers strive to have that super epic portrait. I mean, I see photographers who do, like, you know, crazy off camera flash, really intense, composition, you know, in every single frame. And that's a lot of work. And that's something that they're very, very good at. Some photographers just sort of get more of the really natural moments, you know, the laughing, that sort of thing. It really depends on what you're looking for. So there are people out there who are more specialized in those things.
What do people expect? Like, what do your clients typically expect in terms of, like, you know, deliverables? How many photos would they like at the end of the day?
My clients usually expect about 60 photos per hour. That's usually the ballpark.
So one a minute.
Yeah, exactly. And honestly, like, I don't deliver anything that I'm not pleased with that I wouldn't put on my blog personally. So I do give photos that I feel are perfect, unless it's a moment that's, I can't, you know, it's not maybe the most amazing photo, but it's an incredibly emotional moment. So I'll include something like that too. Something that I know would be really important to the bride and groom, say, you know, their grandmother congratulating them after the ceremony or something like that.
Right. So somewhere in the neighborhood of, depending on you know, how long you're there for, 400 to 500 images is kind of a reasonable expectation nowadays.
Absolutely. And you'll find a lot of photographers actually deliver quite a bit more than that. So I would say 500 is the baseline.
Wow. Okay. I thought that was going to be high when I wrote that down.
Oh, God, no.
And also, you know, when it comes, like you said, you know, like a vintage style, maybe you want something new, or perhaps you want like a full documentary style,
mm-hmm.
you know, where you shoot, like you said, more of the moments and less of the, you know, the overlit, which mm-hmm. I like all of them. Like, I don't know what I would pick nowadays.
It's really hard. Yeah. And I think it's one of those things, like, usually what I find just from talking to my couples, what they do is they look through every last photographer they can find. And then they start to shortlist it down to the different portfolios that really caught their eye.
Mm-hmm.
And then within those portfolios, they sort of really weigh what it is that got them excited about the different photographers. And that really helps them see, you know, what exactly is our style. So they might have, you know, mostly more soft vintage style and a couple that are more edgy and new and sort of realize that they really, that soft romantic is really what speaks to them more. Or they might really, really love those dramatic portraits and there's only so many photographers that do that. And so those are the photographers that they're going to focus on.
So once you decide on what it is that you want and you're kind of looking around, when do you factor in your budget?
I think it's really good to have an idea of your budget up front. And you can really, what I would suggest doing is putting down your budget, looking at the photographers you love and what can fit within that budget and sort of seeing what the going price is around those photographers that you love. It's one of those things that seems like, oh, I can't really afford that, you know, extra $500 for this person. But looking back, those photos become priceless as more time goes by. I honestly, you know, and I'm not just saying that because I'm a wedding photographer, obviously I, you know, I enjoy making money, but it's something that I'm very passionate about myself, even in my own life. You know, I've had my photos taken professionally a number of times, and I was thinking the other day, I was looking at the photos of my son just after he was born and the photos that we had done when I was pregnant. And I was realizing that I honestly can't remember how much I spent on those photos, but if something happened to those photos now, I would pay anything to have them back.
Right.
Anything. And it's, those moments go by so quickly. And it seems in the moment that it's not as, you know, drastic to, it's not as important to spend that money, but as the years pass, you'll see that it's something that you want it to be an experience that you really love and you want them to be photos that you really cherish. And if it means spending just a little bit more to get that photographer that you know is going to do that job, then it's absolutely worth it.
So I always kind of tell people that, you can pay too little for sushi.
Heck yeah.
And so, you know, you have to find that threshold. Now, what, you know, what is it, if all you can eat sushi is $4, you can go ahead and skip that.
Yeah, you probably don't want it. No. It's probably a bad idea.
That's $4 wasted, and the same goes with wedding photos. But let's say you're going to have, you know, you're like a normal, regular Vancouver wedding. Starting at, let's say it's going to be, you're going to hire someone for 6 hours of coverage.
Well, 6 hours isn't very typical.
8 hours?
8 hours is the typical.
Okay, so 8 hours, there you go. Good to know. So 8 hours is pretty much, you'd say, the baseline.
Yeah.
Okay, what would be sort of the bottom threshold one would expect to pay for that and be happy with their photos?
That's tough. I would say usually about $3,000 to $3,500 is the base.
Okay.
For the really good photographers in Vancouver. There are people who will do it for lower than that, and they are good, but they're usually not as experienced. So that's, it's a bit of a crapshoot with anything lower than that.
It is a risk. I mean, think about when, like, you started out, you didn't have any experience.
Oh no.
but you're like, obviously I'm guessing there's probably, you know, a few dozen people who are thrilled that they took a chance on you when they did.
Oh yeah.
That's great. You do have to get lucky, and you do have to kind of pay accordingly. So if, I mean, you can probably in that regard find someone who will do it for $2,500 instead of the $3,500, and you might get lucky, but you might not.
Exactly.
So that's up to you. Now it's, you're deciding, well, like, what are you willing to sacrifice for that extra money? Well, if it comes down to, you know, a couple more people at your wedding, maybe you want to go that way and take a gamble. Maybe you don't. Maybe, you know, Aunt Jean and Uncle Ted can stay home and you hire that other photographer.
Well, and the other reason, too, that you find people charging about that much money is they've got insurance. They've got extra gear to make sure that they're covered if anything breaks at your wedding. There's lots of other factors why they cost that much.
Right.
And so you're not just buying experience. You're also buying the added insurance and checks and balances to make sure that they can do that job for you.
So now you have your budget laid out. Mm-hmm. You've decided how much you want to spend roughly, and then you're going to probably spend, you know, 15% higher than that anyways. minimum. But now you said you can check out, you know, you can Google people, you can check them on the professional wedding professionals of British Columbia site.
Wedding professionals of Canada.
Of Canada.
Yeah.
Even better. What about wedding fairs?
Yeah, wedding fairs, there are some good photographers there. I do actually find when I'm on forums and not, it seems like it's more of the photographers that are newer that go to the wedding fairs. There are some excellent photographers you go to. But yeah, I'm kind of noticing that. But it's hard at a wedding fair because you can't really get an idea for someone's personality. It's right. Really quick. Like it's almost like speed dating. You're talking to so many different people at, you know, within an hour or what have you. And so that can be a really difficult place, and you don't get a huge idea of what the market is like. You get a very limited number. So, I mean, it can be a good place. There are some excellent wedding fairs. And again, I think it's one of those things where you want to look at, well, what type of wedding are we having? What type of wedding fair should we go to? So
there's more than one kind.
There's lots of different wedding fairs out there. There's some that are more offbeat, sort of DIY, vintage sort of wedding fairs, that sort of thing. So, and those photographers that will be more that sort of style will be there.
Okay.
So I think that's also, you know, where you really want to just sort of sit down and think, what's our personal style? What are we looking for in our wedding? What's our decor going to be like? And then start kind of building around that for who's going to capture it.
I see. Now, see, a little background for a number of years, a long time ago, I used to shoot wedding videos back when they were cheesy as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mine were not. I'm not saying I was the catalyst either, but I was coming along right at the time when there was that shift being made from cheesy wedding videos into sort of documentary style or feature film style kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I never went to a wedding fair. And I was always kind of, you know, encouraged by the people in the business. You got to go to the wedding fair and show your highlight reel and all this. And it, for the exact same reasons you just described to me, I just didn't feel I wanted to go.
No, I've never done one either.
Yeah.
It's just, it seems like a lot of money and I don't really get to connect with anyone. And for me, I really... that personal connection is where I feel that I really, I get the chance to know people and they get to know me. And that's what I'm looking for in my clients. I mean, they're obviously looking for stuff in me too, but I'm also looking for those clients that I really connect with. Because that really, you know, it fuels my fire. It gets me creative. So I want it to be a relationship that goes both ways.
So how important is word of mouth then in your business?
Oh, heck yes. That is, I think that's probably one of the number one ways that I get clients actually is word of mouth and referrals from other photographers and past clients, you name it.
Now the one caveat there, now I'm just playing the devil's advocate for a second. Mm-hmm. You know how everybody likes to think that their doctor is the greatest doctor?
True.
And some of them aren't very good doctors.
Well, except for mine.
Yeah, mine were terrible. I had terrible doc. But anyways, that was back, you know, here in Germany, they're great. But and listening to the show, I'm sure. But no, everyone wants, you know, or their barber. Oh, you got to see, you know, go to my hairdresser. She's the greatest because they want to feel that way. Can you trust everybody who says
no,
they're a wedding
true.
Photographer?
But I think it really helps when you're really connected with your bride and groom. Like I actually friend a lot of my brides and grooms on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I try to make sure that I post their photos and tag them in it. You know, things like that. I try to feature their wedding on my blog, that sort of thing. And then all their friends not just hear about me, but they also see me.
Right.
So that really helps.
So I actually want to go back and just say I didn't mean any of what I just said about their word of mouth stuff. I believe in it so firmly because of the internet now. Because of there's nowhere to hide anymore.
No, everything's out there.
Yeah. So when people do say, "Oh, you got to hire Amber. She's the best," you could actually find out. Wait a second. And oh yeah, absolutely. You know, mm-hmm. You're gonna get what you pay for. So okay. So now you've gone and you've decided where to look. Here's the most important thing. Now, this is going to vary in from market to market, but Vancouver, probably a typical high-end market, I would assume.
Yeah, we've got everything in between, high-end, low-end, you name it, but we do have a very healthy high-end.
When do you start looking?
You should really start looking a year out from your wedding.
Wow.
At least. Actually, I'm really surprised. Now, I usually typically a year out is good. But I, for some reason, next year, 2016, is booking like crazy for weddings that are over a year out. So sometimes even earlier. And I know that sounds crazy, but if you really love a photographer or you really love your venue, you really need to start planning that early on.
Wow.
Yeah.
Or get married in February.
Or get married in February. That's also good.
Yeah. I mean, that's not even a guarantee, though.
No. Even then, it's a really competitive market, and people, you know, when you love someone, you really got to put the money down because people will snap them up.
So, there's a difference between February wedding and an August wedding. So, what is the high season in say Vancouver?
I would say that the high season is typically from May to October, but really concentrated July, August, September are really the biggest months.
Okay.
But I would say May is when it really starts, and then October is when it tapers off.
So if you're getting married in August of 2016, you're going to want to start looking in the next couple
months.
Oh, yeah,
it's booking already, so okay. you definitely want to start looking.
So and do you have any idea how that translates like across? I mean, obviously you're not dialed into the continent, but you do talk to people. Is it pretty typical across North America?
I think that it starts a little bit later in other portions of the of North America, just because of how cold it is. Mm-hmm. We're kind of, you know, we're the California of Canada here. So, but in the colder provinces and the colder states, I think it's a little bit later that they start.
But you still have to look a year in advance, or can you get away with 6 months?
Absolutely.
Okay, so if you're in Winnipeg, start looking, you know, half a year to 9 months ahead.
Absolutely.
Minimum. Okay. So what when you go and find somebody, let's say like you basically narrow it down to how many people do you narrow it down? You go through the whole haystack and you pick a few people that you're going to shortlist. What does that shortlist look like?
Typically I find people, once they've moved to the point of meeting me, they usually have a group of about maybe 3 to 5 photographers that they're talking with. Sometimes it's only two, sometimes it's only me. So it's different for everyone. But I think once you've gotten to the point of making meetings, you've gone it down to a very small list like that.
Okay, so say you got, you know, three or four people, and you go meet with them. So what are you looking for immediately?
Well, there's little things like, are they on time? Are they dressed well? Those are good things to note. It sounds superficial, but you want to make sure that they're going to be looking nice and tidy and professional at your wedding. So that, you know, that's something to pay attention to. Personality is huge. Really, the person that is photographing your wedding is going to be with you for pretty much the entire day. And more than any, they're going to be the person other than your spouse that you're going to see the most during that entire day. And you want to make sure it's someone that you really mesh well with, that makes you laugh, who knows how to be subtle when it's important, someone that you can really trust in.
They are going to, and because I have shot a lot of wedding videos, I've seen a lot of wedding photographers.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, oddly, I don't know how many times I worked with the same photographer twice. I saw pretty much everybody, not everybody, but I saw a lot of different people. And I found that a lot of photographers are going to influence your day.
Absolutely.
Most of them in the positive.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them in the negative. And there will be a few photographers who really just blend in and don't influence the day at all, but those are kind of rare.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to second what you said about personality and attitude. It is such an important aspect. I mean, images are nice. Obviously, you've got the people shortlisted. You like their images, but I have seen some people whose behavior is just abhorrent.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And surprisingly, I think, wow, and I know that these, I happen to know that they were very high end. Like, they were getting a lot of money. You know, they were probably in the, I would say, starting at like $6,000, like,
yep,
14 years ago.
No, I know. And I can't tell you how many times I've been shooting a wedding and someone in the bridal party will say, oh, this wedding I was at last year and the things the photographer said or didn't do, or you name it. And it's someone who's not cheap,
right?
But their attitude sucks.
But the attitude, and to me, the attitude was always like, you know, hey, it's so nice of you to get married, so I have something to shoot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Instead of, I always kind of thought, wow, you should be a little bit humble and honored that you get to be here in the first place.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, little unknown fact, but I usually cry a little bit at each wedding, because it is really important to me about these two people and their love and their families coming together and how important it is to all of these people.
At the risk of pandering, I have had the occasional eyepiece fog up.
Yeah, it
even
happens.
Me, yeah. Even the tough guy me. There's a few times, but by the time that I've shot these people's weddings, I ended up doing a lot of word of mouth stuff. And so you might be shooting somebody's wedding who was at, they met you at a wedding they were at the year before.
Exactly.
And so, and you know,
you've
that
had
backstory.
Communication. For me, I have the engagement session. You know, I've gotten to know these people and I know who they are to each other. I know their personal stories. I know how they met.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes I know their struggles that maybe other people don't know.
Yes.
I try to have people really get comfortable and open up to me. It seems it's like, I thought you were just taking photos.
No.
You know, you get to know your clients, and that's honestly, by knowing my clients, that's how I get the really genuine photos of them. And so when I see, like, I had this one groom, it was a few years back, but he just lost it when his bride came down the aisle and just started crying, and I couldn't help it. I just cried along with him because I know who she is to him. They're best friends. They were best friends for years before they ever got married. And he always loved her. And then magically they actually ended up together. And I know what that moment means to him.
Right.
And you know, it's just, yeah. Sorry, we're off on a tangent.
That's not a tangent at all. That's very important. But you did suck it up and managed to get the photo, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I was shooting and crying, you know.
So on the reverse side, if when you're looking for a photographer, I think what you're saying is find someone that you trust, because they are going to be trusted with this most, you know, intimate moment, this real expression of your love and your family and everything that's important is all coming together, and you're going to trust them to participate in it.
Absolutely. And all those moments are fleeting and will never be the same again. And just knowing that you don't even have to think about it.
Whew. Okay. So when you do meet the person for the first time, like where do you meet? Where do you typically meet somebody?
Well, I typically meet people, I used to meet them in a lobby of this, it was this beautiful lobby lounge of a hotel. Unfortunately, that's no longer available.
Which hotel?
But the Opus Hotel downtown. It was always quiet. It was beautiful. Nobody else around usually, but they've changed it into a bar now. So it's kind of got a bar scene going on. It's not where I want to meet people anymore. But I'll see if there's a cafe nearby them, that I can meet. I would love to have a studio to meet people in, but the overhead of that is just more than I would really like to take on. And then I'd have to translate it into my prices. So typically I don't shoot in a studio, so there's no call for me to have one.
Right.
So usually it's cafes, or I'll meet people at their homes, depending on what works best for them.
Okay. Now, so you sit down with a photographer. Do you ask questions?
Oh, ask all the questions. Many questions.
What do you ask, for example?
Some really big things to ask are, do you have insurance? That seems like
Insurance for what?
Liability insurance, say somebody gets hurt on the shoot, is a really big one. Just anything like that. Most photographers actually don't have liability insurance.
Right.
That's something they don't bother with, so that's something you want to make sure they have. You want to make sure they've got backup equipment. How many cameras do you bring? How many lenses do you have? What lenses do you shoot with? What camera are you shooting with? I bring backups of everything, and I bring enough battery life, enough memory to be able to shoot up to 18 hours if I need to. Even if I'm just shooting an 8-hour wedding, I bring that much just to make sure.
Right. Okay.
You never know. You might be in the middle of something and your card stops working, or your camera stops working, and I've had that happen where literally my camera stopped working during the recessional, and I wear two straps at the same time, so I just tossed it to the side and grabbed the other camera on the other side and just kept shooting.
Wow.
So, okay. So I figured that later.
Okay. So, well, the answer when you ask the question, how many cameras do you have? What is the minimum number that they should have?
They should have two, okay. Preferably three.
For the reasons you just said, in case one goes down. Oftentimes when I shoot with two, I have different lenses on each, so I don't have to switch back and forth.
Exactly. Same here.
But it's also the big thing is you better have a redundancy in place.
Exactly. I mean, I have a huge variety of lenses, and then my lenses actually sort of overlap a little bit in focal length. So if I lose one of them, then I have something similar that I can shoot with. No problem.
So if I don't know the answer, what I'm looking for, if I say, hey, what lenses do you shoot with? And I have no clue. I'm just fishing.
You're just asking.
What should I be looking for? What's a reasonable answer for a layman?
They should have at least a couple wide angles and a couple portrait lenses and at least one or two telephoto.
Okay,
that's what you're looking for.
So not just one big zoom.
No, that's not what you want. You want to see a variety of lenses, a variety of focal lengths. Typically fast lenses is what you want to hear. So anything that's at least 2.8 or larger, I shoot mostly with like a 1.2 or a 1.4 lens for my focal length. So that's really what you want to hear. Those are lenses that you know can be very flexible in low light.
Fast. That's a great buzzword. Just hey, do you have fast? If you say it like that, do you use fast glass?
Yeah,
they might think you're joking. But the answer, if they say, oh yeah, yes, I do.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, and then they actually know what they're talking about.
Right. Exactly. So that's something else you're looking for. What about locations? Do you ask them about locations they like?
Yeah, I typically get asked that quite often, and I have my locations that I like, but my actual answer is I get really excited about locations that I've never shot at before. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's, I think, also really good to see in a photographer, is someone who's flexible and gets excited by new ideas and new situations. Someone who can think on their feet and get excited about that instead of panicking and wanting their comfort zone.
Right.
So that's also really good. Someone who's just really excited to explore.
What about, should you find out if they have a contingency plan for rain, like for the...
Absolutely. Absolutely. If they've got an idea for your specific wedding, because every wedding's going to have a different, contingency plan. So, you know, what would you do if it was raining, or what do you think, where do you think we should go for portraits? Should we change where the ceremony is? That, those sorts of things. So...
What about assistants? Is this when you ask if they have an assistant, second shooter?
Yeah, and that's a good thing to know up front, too. Typically, most photographers do shoot with at least an assistant, if not a second shooter. And those people are not often, well, depending on the studio, of course, some are a two-person team. But usually you won't have a confirmation on who exactly that will be until a few months out from your wedding. Mm-hmm. And that's just because most of us shoot with other photographers who have their own businesses. So it depends on who's booked for that day.
Right.
So that's, you know, that's something to definitely ask about, though.
What else do you, what about turnaround time? What's typical turnaround time?
Typical turnaround time in Vancouver is actually 90 days. Mm-hmm. Just due to how busy you get during the wedding season. Some photographers, it's 2 weeks. Some photographers, it's the full 90 days. Okay. So it really, you know, it depends on the photographer. That's something you should ask them up front. Most of us are pretty good about sending, at least putting some photos on the blog so that you have something to look at while you're waiting. And I know it can be hard to wait. Well worth the wait, though. For just how much effort we do put into that.
Yes.
But we're also really open to sending photos for your thank you cards if you need that ahead of time, because I know that it's nice to get those out as early as possible. So, you know, those are things, though, that you need to hash out with your photographer and make sure you're comfortable with.
Do you put like some teasers up, like in the first few days?
Oh, yeah. Usually within at least 2 days, I put up some teasers.
And why do you do that?
Well, I do it for a couple of reasons. One, I want to keep the excitement going. So it's just, you know, the wedding's just happened. And today we're so connected that, you know, you immediately want something to look back on. It's, you know, everybody's Instagramming. And so it's nice to have that up right away so that you can just be, you know, you're so excited and you're so up from the wedding that it just kind of keeps that emotion going. It's also, too, like I was mentioning about photos being put on Instagram and whatnot, it's one of those things that I would like to have the professional photos be seen as early as possible. Mm-hmm. So that people aren't getting bored of the wedding by the time I put up my teasers.
And here's something else to look for in a photographer. And I know this is this. I 100% know this is you. And this is me too. When I've gone and shot something that I'm really proud of and I'm really excited about, I can't wait to get that out. Like, I can't wait for everyone to see it and share that excitement and say, look, I can't do all 500 today, but there's three photos that I know are just going to knock
your socks. But you really got to see these ones.
Yes.
Exactly.
And that is the kind of attitude you want to look for in your photographer. And then no matter what you're paying, you're ripping them off. And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
So now you've decided, you've checked the turnaround time and all these things. Now it comes time to secure it. What is typical for a deposit? What, like a percentage?
Well, that is very particular. I wouldn't say that there is a typical. There are very different ways that people do their deposits.
Okay.
I work in thirds. That's how I do it. So people put down 33%, I guess, is a third of the total, and then that holds the date. That's non-refundable. That's
non-refundable. Why is that non-refundable?
It's non-refundable because I'm turning away other weddings.
Okay.
So I'm saying to everyone else who's coming along, even if it's someone who wants to book way more, sorry, I'm booked that day. And so if you decide later, oh, you know what, we're actually going to go with this other photographer, can we have our money back? Not only do I lose the income from you, but I've lost potential income from all these other people that I've said no to.
Right.
So that's why. Now, if for some reason I'm pretty flexible, if I am able to book that date, I have no problem giving the retainer back. Or if you want to move the date to another date that I'm available, no problem. We can just transfer it.
Mm-hmm.
but some photographers are much more rigid than that. That's something to know.
Have you ever been burned?
Never, actually. Yeah. I've always had, but I think it's sort of that, you know, putting your personality out there and really only having the clients that really have that connection with you. They're really very serious about you.
Mm-hmm.
So I've never had a bad experience that way.
No, that's typically how it goes. I know the attitude is sometimes, well, oh great, haha, they're just going to keep your money.
No, it's not about that.
Okay, so that's it. So now you've got your wedding photographer, you're booked, and you can brag to everybody, and we'll continue this on the next episode.
Sounds good to me.
So real quick, Amber, where can people find your stuff?
Well, you can find me at amberhughes.ca. That's my actual portfolio and my blog. You can also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/amberhughesphotography. And I'm also on Instagram now, if people want to follow me there.
Okay.
And you can find me at, hold on one second. It's instagram.com/amberhughesphoto, or if you're on the Instagram app, just look up amberhughesphoto.
Check
it out.
Okay, well, thanks a lot.
Great. My pleasure.
And we're back. You thinking about getting married all over again, Adam?
Yeah. I'm going to hire a better photographer.
You can't get a worse one. Yeah. There you go. For those of you who don't know, it was me.
Yeah.
It was I.
Yes.
Who shot Adam's wedding way back in the day. Yeah, a lot of good stuff there. And as did we mention it in the interview? I forget now. There was going to be a part two to this. And the part two is very interesting as well.
Okay.
And that'll be coming up in the next, I don't know, few episodes, but we'll let you know. Photo challenge, Adam, you have one. I heard two in a row.
Again, on this, flash bandwagon. I'm not ready to get off yet, but how about something else that's flash oriented? Daylight, like, because we did this, you know, both of us pretty much did this in our houses in the dark.
Right.
How about using flash during the daylight?
Mix it up.
Yeah.
All right. I'm in.
Okay.
Great. All right. Well, Adam, where can people find your stuff?
The Two Hosers Facebook site. Also, adamschwartz.ca. And what about your stuff?
I'm just going to post my stuff there to make it easy for everybody.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
It just seems like, you know what? There should be one website for the whole world.
Yeah, I think that would be great. It would have to be neatly organized.
Right, like a lot of links and stuff, I suppose. A lot of things to click on. But like, there's so many times you're like, what is the name of that website? And if it was just website.com. Life would be so easy.
Yeah, that's. I guess I think patent that idea.
I think Google already did.
Oh.
Yeah. So you can find my stuff on alanatridge.com or the two of us at twohosers.com, where you can find all the links and photos and everything we just talked about. So that's it. Until next week, get out there and make better photos.